face, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm tonight, Mr. Matt Weber of the board. SP Futures up 46. Dow Futures up 440. NASDAQ Futures up 125. They were, S&P was down as much as 9 last night, so we've got a big bounce. We obviously bounced Friday afternoon. The last maybe 5 minutes of the day we shot up after being down heavy all day. The Dow came back almost 300 points near the close. We have Mr. Frank with us.
We do.
Definitely.
Frank, how are you, buddy?
All right. I'm sorry, I wasted time on the overtime on the Bears game.
Was that about as bad a football as you could possibly? I mean, we do manage to drag the other team into the abyss with us.
I wonder if we could beat the Jets.
I couldn't believe that the other team kicked that field goal with a minute something left last night. Why didn't they just take a knee for a play? Give the Bears a chance. Obviously, they don't think the Bears could take the chance, but still, is that about as dumb a coaching decision as you could find, or what?
No, the dumbest coaching decision was Nagy taking the timeout with 40-some seconds left, or what, a minute 40 left at the end of the first half.
That completely changed the
momentum.
That changed the complete momentum of the game when he did that and gave the Saints the chance to keep going on 3rd and 13 when they were probably just going to take a knee and run it out or run it up the middle because the clock was dwindling down. That completely changed everything. They get the first down. All of a sudden, they go down and score a touchdown, and the game changed after that.
Yeah, it's
And why would you want to slow down the game to give it to our offense?
I don't know. It's I was digging around this morning here, and Webby was giving me grief, of course. But I was looking at the Bears' draft history, and boy, oh boy, talk about a team with no. I mean, I know we don't want to go back to 2009 and 2008. God bless it. You guys remember 2008, 2009, and 10? They didn't have a one or two pick. 2010, Major Wright, Corey Wooten, Joshua Moore, who are these people? They only had five picks in 2010. They had 2009, Jaron Gilbert, who the hell is he? Jaquin Iglesias. Henry Melton was okay for a while. DJ Moore. I mean, they don't have any offensive linemen. Anyway, they had Gabe Cabrini, and then Kyle Long was the number one pick. I forgot about him, and he was a good pick. They don't have any offensive linemen anywhere along the way here. Why is it such a shock that they have no offensive line? And Kyle Long should still be playing, obviously. He was a hell of a player. And he got injured. He got that horrible roll-up injury. But he was a guy who actually didn't play much. They're right, man. He hardly played in college. He's a guy that could have been a 15-year guy. And then he just, one injury left to another. So that's a sad situation. If he was still playing big time, I still
then we'd just have three crap offensive linemen. We'd have three crappy offensive instead of four or five.
Well, that's right, but I mean, one helps out. One makes a big difference, but yeah, I mean, they just have not looked at that area for really a decade and a half. And so, I mean, other teams, you look at the 85 team, you had Keith Van Horn was the number one pick. Jimbo Colbert was the number one pick. Tommy Thayer was the number three pick. Then he probably would have been higher if he didn't already sign with somebody else. I don't remember. Manny, was Mark Bortz the number four at Iowa, or am I getting fuzzy here in the brain?
I don't know. I'd have to look that up.
I don't really recall, but he was a. I think Hildenberg was kind of a find. But still, I mean, you had two number one guys at tackles, and guess what? It kind of showed. And then watching the Cowboys later, boy, that was a disaster. Those guys,
yeah, they're terrible.
They paid Ezekiel. Go ahead, Manny.
By the way, Bortz was drafted in the eighth round of the 1983 draft, pick number 219. So he would have been a free agent, you know, this day and age.
Yeah, well, yeah.
He had Tom Thayer playing then, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure
with the USFL.
Tom Thayer, I think, still holds a record that, well, who knows if it'll ever be broken, but he played a full season at Notre Dame, then he played the full season for the USFL, and the next year played the full season for the Bears, so he ended up having essentially three seasons almost in a calendar, one on a calendar year, but he basically stuck another season in there, which most people don't do. I guess some people probably played in Canada in the offseason and still played in the NFL, so he's probably not the only one, but USFL did play a full year that one year, didn't they? I believe they did.
I don't know. It's like a Trump to do in.
I ran into all those guys. What a great story. I ran into all those guys down in Arizona. What a bunch of roided-out monsters those dudes were. It was Tommy, and then it was all these guys. One tackle made me look like a kid. He must have been 6'8", like 3-something. They were huge men. They all came into this one bar, and it was eerie. Those guys were like, they were like, not like regular humans. They were huge to begin with, and boy, talk about roided out. They were. All right.
I had a cousin that was a world-class super heavy weightlifter, so I'm very familiar with roided out.
Oh, man. And they were giving each other forearm shivers that would have knocked anybody else through the window, right? And it was, they were pretty wild, drinking everybody else's drinks and stuff. Tommy was very nice, but, he did drink my drink, and then he left me $20. I guess that was okay. But, anyway.
Did you pay him back?
I don't know. He said, when I come to Chicago, I'll call you guys. So the only number I left, and I told him I was a trader, and all of a sudden, one morning on a Friday, I just went down to the trading floor, and he's paging me at First Options, wanted me to meet him after the game because they played in Chicago. He and his buddies were all going to some bar in Cicero on the way to the flight out in Midway. I'm like, my glad I missed that phone call. Last thing I needed was to be in some bar in Cicero, which a bunch of guys heading back to Arizona at like 4 in the morning. That would have been ugly.
Mike Rocco would have been there.
Yeah, well, unreal. All right, so Frank, what's going on in the market? Are we going to, why are we bouncing back here? Is it the election? Is it who's going to win? Who's not going to win? We're just down too much last week. What's going on? We're shutting down Britain. I don't see where the great news is here. It's hard even to manage what the news is here. I sent you guys a thing about, to talk about the disease for a second. Everybody keeps saying follow the science, and then some guy, CNBC publishes on the front page some non-peer-reviewed story about some researcher. Whenever you start saying that, it's like, remember I had an older, spinster aunt. She never married, and she was terrific. But she was one of these, she would start conversations by, well, you know what they say. And I'd say, Aunt Mary, who exactly is they are you quoting here? Because I got older and more of a pain in the ass.
Well, we're governed that way right now. Some people say.
Yeah, some people say, well, what was the song in The Officer and the Gentleman? I don't know, but it's been said, Air Force wings are made of lead or something like that. I don't know, but it's been said. It's like it's governing our press and our thought process today. So some guy comes out, Stanford, with a research study where they somehow cobble together that Trump's rallies, and they could be more careful, there's no doubt about that, somehow are responsible for 300,000 cases and 700 deaths. How the hell would you ever make that? Can anybody ever
especially about
together?
All those patriots who went to those rallies. We have a new definition of patriot. That's very apparent this past week.
Yeah, it's kind of a bizarre world we're in here now, and I don't. But the market clearly, I mean, we have pretty good sized positions, and normally you would look at our stuff. And in a couple areas we're long premium, a couple areas we're not. But the long premium, one guy keeps telling me, if nothing moves, we're gonna get caught on this. And I said, yeah, I'm with you. But when have we ever in our lifetime seen like a whole month in the market, like every day? I mean, this is a 1.5% move already this morning, for God's sake.
Well, and then you have to manage your Vega somehow. How, I don't know, but the cost of not being hedged or having opened ended risk is greater than a Vega hit.
I don't see how but you're right. You look at your time, because for those that don't know kind of what we're talking about, I'll make this simple. You can have, if ever you get somebody who gives you some long song and dance about, you know, options where they can do this, they sell this premium and they do this, you know, there's really only two kinds of positions and options. Now, of course, there's a million different ways to get there, but there's, you know, positions where you want time to go by and the stock to not, and the market to not move, or you want, in which case, every day it doesn't happen, you make money, or you have positions where every day it costs you to hang on to the position, but if the market moves, it's a good thing for you. Is it right, Frank? There's only two kinds.
There are two kinds of traders, premium buyers and premium sellers.
But and some people will tell you that they are premium sellers. They do it in such a way where they can't get caught. If somebody ever tells you that, run, don't walk to the door. I mean, because it can't happen. But right now, I mean, you look at the cost of the premium per day to stay long, and yet you look at how much we're moving. It's mind-boggling that it could almost be worth it, Frank, but it's almost worth it the last couple of weeks of being long and stuff. The only problem you run into is if you have, say you've got the spiders, you've got, pick a number, I don't know the spiders, but the spiders, they say it's, 330 or something. Well, if you're long at 330 calls versus some other something, and the thing drops down to 324, you almost really have to adjust because it's so far away to get back to 330, right? Even after one day. I mean, it takes, we got this, good sized new account. It's a, totally, I'm not going to go into it on the air, but anyway, it's traded more like a professional account. Frank, we've had it for a month. We've had to adjust every single day in a month. It's never happened in 40 years of being in the business.
It's like being a market maker again.
Yeah. Well, even market makers
have to feed the beast.
Yeah,
right.
You got to constantly, we're either, you know, where do we want this to go? Well, we want it to, we'd be better off if it went down. Okay, it goes down like 6 points. Then you go, wait a minute, if it goes back up, we're screwed. So you got to adjust that. Then you get back up again and you go, whatever goes down. I mean, it's incredible. And the position isn't even that big yet. I mean, we're trying to get bigger, but we're not there yet. I mean, I don't know how you. I mean, this is not anybody right now. And this is a shameless plug. Anybody who thinks that they can have a pretty good size option position, unless you happen to have been a professional trader in a previous life, to think you can sort of manage this by yourself, or to have like 15, 20 positions going right now in different stocks. You know, good luck to you without having a broker or anybody helping you out.
And even if you are a professional trader, it's difficult if you don't have another professional trader to talk to perform the sanity check.
Well, that's right. Ours is a, because I do some work for I do some work for a Nigerian family office in their protective stuff that they do for people. I've got two people that work for me full time. So there's three people that spent years on the trading floor managing positions. I mean, this is not a fool's game at this point. This is not even trying to be crazy. It's trying to stay even. And it's don't underestimate the task here. I mean, if you're trading,
I never would.
I love the people who are trading the E-minis, Frank. They're the market timers. Because we got a bunch of those guys too that trade through our IB section. You know, they do their stuff. We don't even. They just do their own. It is so difficult. I mean, guys are constantly buying, being stopped out, selling, being stopped out. Once in a while, you know, they get a nice winner. But boy, I the thought of just deciding, okay, we're going up today, going down tomorrow. I would never, as big as my ego might be in some areas, the thought that I could just trade and time this market, I can't even begin to go there, can you?
No. And now we have the e-micros.
I don't even see those.
Oh, Yeah, all you have to have is $250 in your account.
Oh, God. Are the guys still around that have the exchange where everything expires at the end of the day?
I don't know. They offered me a job, and I went and checked on it, and it was like, so can I sell land in Florida on the side? And
yeah,
but it was like I felt very uncomfortable doing it. I don't get the emails from them anymore, and I didn't unsubscribe, so I'd say no.
Well, that was a Nadex, wasn't it?
Pardon me?
Was a Nadex, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they sponsor us for a while. And, but I think everything at Friday night, everything's gone.
They had dailies.
They had dailies, but I think the furthest out they went was a week. Just kind of goofy stuff, I don't know.
Start trading in minutes. They're still around. Now, there goes my libel insurance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what did you make of the college football this weekend?
Well, Dan Mullen should be fined, if not suspended, for his behavior in the Missouri-Florida game. He incited
the guys on the Bears yesterday? I've never seen that. The guy in the Bears attacking the other guy and smacking him on the side of the head of the helmet. What was that all about?
In the previous play, the guy had consciously put his finger inside Anthony Miller's face mask, and the finger was touching him somewhere around his eye. And the guy who was attacked was attacked by a guy who got kicked off the Saints, and that was, what, about 3 weeks ago, Maddie?
Yeah, that sounds right.
The guy Wynn was on the Saints?
No, the one that from the Saints was attacked by somebody on his own team, some guy named Thomas.
Oh. Our
and,
Thomas?
And I don't know. How many Thomases are in the NFL?
I don't know. Hey,
well, this was Michael Thomas, the star
wide
receiver.
I was watching the Green Bay game. That Adrian Amos guy had a huge game. Why did the Bears dump him?
He got paid a lot of money by Green Bay.
Okay, he was just a free agent.
Yeah, the Bears loved him.
It was a... You know, you wonder, and this is more of a Mitty Weber question, you wonder, it's not all that obvious that Green Bay is that much better of a team than Minnesota. Are these teams a lot more even than you think they are, even though one's 2-5 and one's 5-2?
Well, Minnesota's had a bunch of tough, like, one-point losses. They lost at Seattle by one. They lost to the Titans, I think, by one. A really close game. I mean... They could easily be 5-2. I mean, that's how close this league is. We know the Bears.
So they looks to me like they could catch the Bears pretty easy.
Oh, absolutely. And Detroit's 3-4. I mean, they're not that far behind. We've watched the Bears. They're 5-3. They could just as easily be 3-5. I mean, no one would argue with that.
No,
but they are 3-0 with Trubisky.
That's true.
Yeah.
just saying.
Well, I think if you're going to have no offensive line, you're better off having a quarterback that can run a little bit.
Well, it'd be one thing if Foles was lighting the world on fire, and he made a couple nice throws yesterday, but he's been awful. And, you know, I'd rather have an awful mobile quarterback than an awful statue quarterback.
Well, plus one could get better. One, this is all you got.
Another really good point, yeah. One could still get better because he's, you know, 26 or whatever. The other guys, we know what he is.
He's 146.
The one thing he absolutely can't have is a very immobile guy behind the line that's horrible.
Well, and everyone, you keep saying the line is horrible, and they have not been good, there's no doubt, but they do have four starters out. I mean, it's not like this is like the Bears line of 2 years ago that stayed healthy for the whole season, you know?
Well, yeah, but I mean, Aikman was saying, this guy trying to run the ball, so he's met in the backfield like every single play.
Yeah.
And there's no, you see some of these other lines, if you watch any of the Indianapolis game, where the entire, or even the Cowboys had some plays where, you know, the entire line could move one way kind of choreograph, then a counter play coming the other way. You never see, you know, the Bear line doing any kind of seeming like acting together at all. What did Aikman say about the one guard on the quick, the two guys that just did a little bit of stunt and he picked up nobody? He goes, that's offensive line coaching 101. How do you not pick that one up?
Yeah.
I guess a lot of just not playing together, but it's how many more times are they going to be on national TV? Wait, Dallas is on like every week, and they're horrible.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoy watching Dallas lose.
It's fun.
I'll watch it just for that.
Isn't it fun watching the Patriots lose every week, too? They've lost four in a row for the first time in like 18 years. I love it.
Well, they won yesterday, right? Did they win yesterday?
No, they lost.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, they lost to the Bills.
Las Vegas won again. Are they going to be a force, you think, or no?
Well, they have the ingredients. They have a really good running back. They have a good offensive line. They have a really good tight end. Their defense appears to be solid. They went on the road and beat Kansas City. They've proven they can beat good teams. But they also just have, like, a couple of just clunker games where you're like, how the hell did they lose that game? So, I think they're kind of like the Vikings where, you know, if they can run the ball, they can beat anybody like they did yesterday where the Packers just couldn't stop Dalvin Cook. The Raiders are like that. They can play defense. They can, you know, they can grind it out. But if they don't run the ball or if Carr has a couple of turnovers, they're just as bad as anybody else and probably not a playoff team.
Yeah, so what do you make of this? How come this kid from just started his first game for Miami? I thought he was going to be a starter right out of the gate.
Well, he was coming off that really bad hip injury, remember, with Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
And they thought it might end his career, actually. And so that's a big reason why he dropped to number five. And so they wanted to make sure he was 100% healthy before they put him out there. And I think they decided before the season started that he was going to start after the bye week. Well, they must have told everyone that, and that's what they did. But Fitzpatrick was pretty damn good, the veteran, and the Dolphins were 3-3. And so Tua finally comes in yesterday, and he was not good at all. But the team had such a big lead, they just kind of had him hand the ball off, and so they still won. So now you have this young rookie quarterback who everyone thinks is going to be really good, and you're 4-3, and in second place, the Dolphins might have something going.
Well, the rest of the team, they've had some pretty decent drafts in the last 4 or 5 years, right? Because they've been lousy.
Yeah, they have a good defense. They have a couple of weapons on offense, but you know, not huge names. And then now they have a quarterback that they think could be like a Kyler Murray-type quarterback that can run, can throw the deep ball. So we'll see how he develops. But they don't have like big-time wide receivers or anything, at least not right now.
No, well, I don't think Tua's going to be running the ball too much either with that injury.
Probably not, but he's capable.
Oh, yeah.
He can maneuver around the pocket.
Yeah, he could be...
Well, you think the NFL is going to be able to make it through COVID-wise? Obviously, college is having a problem. The Big Ten, for sure.
Well, what is this Big Ten rule? I was watching one game on Saturday. I think it was maybe the Michigan-Michigan State game. It might have been the Northwestern-Iowa game. I can't remember. It was one of those two because I watched big portions of both those games. And the announcer said the Big Ten has this 21-day rule, which is like 11 days longer than every other conference. So,
days is a long time.
If you test positive at 20 years old, you have to be separated for 21 days. Now, I'm not saying that's right, wrong, or indifferent, but who are the doctors in the Big Ten that say it's got to be 21 days versus the ACC that says it's 10 days versus, you know, the Big 12 that says it's whatever they say? How is there not a uniform decision across college football? I mean, Big Ten, how do you coach a team?
Don't compare anything when it comes to treatment of football players to the Big 12.
Well, you're right, and I'm not... I'm not at all saying that the Big Ten's wrong here. I'm just saying, talk about a competitive disadvantage. If you're really going to try to play football, which this is what they're trying to do, you would think you would have a uniform rule across all the conferences on COVID. I mean, if the Big Ten...
Well, I think the truth somewhere, if I knew the exact story, is this kid from Clemson. He's out for 10 days.
Yeah.
He's out for 10 days, but the rule there is... Because they had some of that early stuff regarding, it seemed to affect people that were really high-tuned athletes, unlike us. Then if you came back from the COVID, you might have a heart inflammation issue that lasts for a little bit. I don't know if that's the reason, but this Trevor guy, they said he's off the protocol right now, but they still don't want him playing for Notre Dame because they don't want him coming back in the. Essentially coming off the 10 days on Friday and playing on Saturday. So they push
the weekend. They don't have time to give... They can't give him that test. until after he's off the protocol, which would be Friday, or off the whatever it is.
But they also want guys to...
It's not enough time.
They want you to be able to get your, for lack of a better term, your conditioning back. Because they're not into just, you know, you're sick essentially for 10 days, that's the idea. And they come back the next day and be playing football. So I think the next week, Nettie, is not COVID related. It's get back in shape related.
Well, that could very well be, and that makes some sense. And then I read some article with Barry Alvarez, the longtime Wisconsin head coach, and now he's the athletic director at Wisconsin and has been for quite a while, where he said, he's quoting some study now. Who knows? There's a study for everything, right? That is now saying potentially that whole heart thing is bogus and just completely unfounded. That there's no relation to any sort of heart. You know, there's a name for it.
Well, I think he's right with that.
And I don't know if that's true or not. But and so Barry Alvarez is saying, well, now wait a minute. We're doing 21 days, and now you're telling me that not only are they asymptomatic, but there's no threat of this heart issue either.
Yeah. I wonder if he's seeing new patients. I need a new doctor.
Now again, well,
I'm going to pick Barry Alvarez and his prescription pad.
Well, little known
favorite college rule. Barry Alvarez was an offensive coordinator in Notre Dame's defensive coordinator, national championship team when Lou Holtz was there.
Right.
How far back he goes.
Yeah, well, he's been around forever and had great success. And I'm not saying that he is any sort of medical professional. I'm saying a study came out and they asked for his comment on it because Wisconsin had 22 players out and he said none of them are sick. And now I'm, you know, reading this study where maybe there's no threat of this heart inflammation either. Who knows? I don't know what to believe. I feel like I'm with everyone. I read different stuff every day, and I don't know what's true and what's not true, but I find the whole thing to be very interesting.
Well, you might want to go read all the studies. They say how safe it is to be on an airline. Of course, all the studies were funded by American Airlines. Anyway, it looks like, S&P futures up 43, NASDAQ futures up 110. I'm Tom Howley, this is Matt Weber. Frank, talking to Barbie Lowe during the week. Right back, Mr. John.
Oh, yeah, on Thursday. Will the election be decided by my next meeting on stocks and jocks?
Good question.
I'm going to say no, unfortunately.
I'm going to say no, too.
Oh, yeah. All right. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. This is Mel Weber. This is Jan Flanagan. The second S&P futures up 42. They were up 46, but still pretty darn high. It's 1.3%. We're trying to bounce back from last week, which is the first worst week since March. Last week was but ugly, basically. Dow futures up 408. NASDAQ futures up 112. Over in Europe, we've got bounces here as well. But these guys are really getting hammered last week, so it's a bounce. We'll see how long this lasts. I hope it's not just one day. DAX up 208. 1.8%, FTSE up 60, just a plain 1%. These guys are shutting down pretty much all of Britain for, of course, we'll have to read what the exceptions are for a month. CAC around up 83, 1.8%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 318, that's 1.4%. Shanghai up 59 cents, call that flat, that's weird. And Sang up 352, that's 1.5%. In a way of review on Friday, hard to keep these. The Dow came flying back on the close, only be down 157, it's 0.6%. S&P not so much, they were down 40, 1.2%, roughly what it's up right now, so that's weird. NASDAQ down 274, 2.5%, that's more than they're up now. Bonds, 0.86, which is the highest we've seen them in a while. Bund minus 0.61, Bund will not move, you know, ours has come from really 0.62 to 0.86. Doesn't seem like a lot, but it's, you know, it's a little bit of a movement. Japan, positive 0.04. Wow, 0.043. It's high there for a while. Oil, down another 92 cents, 34.87. That's unreal. Brent, unchanged. Natural gas, down 9 cents, 324. And we've got gold is trading up 11, but still under 1900, 1891. And we've got silver up 48 cents, 24.13. And copper is up, it's unchanged at 3:05. Maybe we got first traffic, weather, sports. Bears.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start on the area expressways. We do have an issue on the inbound Kennedy. It's on the express lanes on the inbound side just before Ogden. There's a report of a crash that's causing delays on the inbound express lanes. No issues on the local lanes. Outbound Kennedy looks okay. Same for the Edens in both directions. Eisenhower and Stevenson are all quiet. On the south side, Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are looking good. Lakeshore Drive's quiet in both directions. Off the expressways, Cicero on the northbound side between 147th and 144th is closed. There was a pin-in crash at the intersection of 147th and Cicero. Drivers are able to turn eastbound and westbound on 147th, so that's the way you navigate that. But Cicero remains closed due to that earlier accident that happened overnight. Also, there's a traffic signal issue at 75th and State. The traffic signals are dark, and that's causing a bit of confusion. On the northwest side, there's a crash Palatine Road on the eastbound side just before Milwaukee Avenue involving a semi off the road into the woods. So there's crews on the scene there, and that's affecting Palatine Road on the eastbound side. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be a much better day than yesterday weather-wise. Sunshine with a high of 51. And then as the week goes on, we get warmer and warmer. We'll be well into the 60s this weekend, and lots of sunshine all week. So looking forward to that. But today, sunshine with a high of 51. Right now, it's clear and 30. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 94 today. Right now, it's clear and 71. In sports, the Bears jumped out to a 13-3 lead late in the second quarter. Looked like they were going to force the Saints to punt and get the ball back. And they also were going to get the ball back to start the third quarter. So the Bears were in great shape. And then they were dominated in the at the end of that second quarter. The Saints went down and scored a touchdown. Saints had control in the second half. Bears kicked a late field goal to tie it. and went into overtime, and then the Saints beat the Bears 26-23 on a Will Lutz field goal in overtime. Nick Foles was okay, better than last week, 28 of 41, 272 yards, two touchdowns, did have an unfortunate interception, that was a big play, 92.7 QB rating, again, good, not great. Bears ran the ball a little bit better, but it was mostly on one David Montgomery run. He had a big 38-yard run, but other than that, he finished 21 for 89. That's a 4.2-yard average, so that's solid. Allen Robinson was very good, 6 balls for 87 yards and a touchdown. Anthony Miller had a coming-out party, 8 balls for 73 yards. That's a 9.1-yard average. And Darnell Mooney, the rookie wide receiver, continues to impress. He caught 5 balls for 69 yards and a touchdown. But again, the Bears fall, and they're now 5-3. The Packers lost as well, so the Bears remain a half game out of first place in the NFC North, behind the 5-2 Packers. The Arizona Cardinals were on bye, so they'll be back next week. And Sunday Night Football, as Chief mentioned, it was the Eagles all over the Cowboys, 23-9. Chief.
What, I was gonna say, the guys, sore do you think that Montgomery is today? Jesus, that poor guy got the crap beat out of him.
He definitely takes a beating every week, and Aikman pointed it out. He's broke more tackles than any player in the NFL so far this season through 8 games, so that's impressive. But that also means that he's getting hit every time he gets the ball behind the line of scrimmage. And see that.
What'd you think of it? We have Jan. Jan, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. How about you?
I'm doing all right. We're just all trying to dissect this. I don't know what I've heard one of the announcers criticize a team as bad as they did the Bears last night. I'm sure it happens, but I don't watch all these games like Manny does. But so the entire demeanor of the offense, they don't get off the ball quick enough. He's a big fan of the tight ends. He goes, it's a man to man. You got to keep running. You don't stop in a man to man. I mean, it seems like they're just. I think when you don't have it all together and your line's not all together, I think the NFL is just so tough to play in. If you don't have most of your afterburners working, I think everything kind of falls apart pretty quick. Is that kind of a fair assessment, Matty, you think,
yeah,
or no?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
I'm to the point, I listen to the games on the radio when I pay any attention to them at all these days just because they're hard to watch.
Yeah.
Too many disappointments here.
Yeah, it's anyway, so, Jan, we've got elections tomorrow. Well, elections have been going on for 2 weeks. Everybody's lining up their legal ducks for the day after, depending on where all the ballots land, to go to various states that have the mail-in ballots, and everybody's going to try and protest everything. I don't know where that all comes out. I mean, we were having this discussion with Frank last week that, you know, when you say the Supreme Court's going to decide the election, I mean, in the last time that happened, there was one specific case that Florida couldn't get their act together, and the Supreme Court basically ruled on something, I'd say, fairly narrow in one state. It just happened. I'm sure they knew what they were doing, but it just happened. It wasn't like you took the entire 50 states and dumped them to the Supreme Court and said, who won? I mean, if this happens in, like, you know, 25 states are pitching all over the place, is there any kind of precedent for anything like that?
Well, it's a bad precedent if it gets ingrained. I think a lot of damage was done to the Supreme Court's reputation because of the 2000 election, but a lot of damage was done to the electoral process and the way its security is perceived by people, by the courts getting involved, because they were really kind of arbitrating between different counties in Florida, which really is a state issue, I mean, for the state to figure out, and for the Supreme Court to interject itself into the most sensitive, you know, electoral count in the country at that point, tainted forever, I think, the presidential elections, because it showed that there was really something over and above how the process had always worked out that could now change a result, you know, and whether there's constitutional grounds or not, I think it does a great deal of damage to the importance of people's individual vote, their confidence in the process, their willingness to participate in it or accept the results that come out. I think it was a bad thing all the way around, and we're likely to reap something even more divisive this time around, I suspect.
Well, I mean, the argument I have about the Florida situation, and I know, you know, Kevin will fight me tooth and nail on this, And, you know, he's usually at least pretty right. For this one, I think he's totally wrong. Not because he's wrong about the you know, the way it went down vis-a-vis current laws, but in terms of common sense, it doesn't, what did they say in My Cousin Vinny? It doesn't pass muster or something like that. The idea of an estate of that size when the electoral process is clearly screwed up. Well, yeah, the Chads issue, and to be fair, which of course, you know, very few of you conservative dudes want to be, or the liberal dudes, the fact that they dealt Bush probably the cruelest blow of all, because the national TV, for those that don't happen to know, you know, look at your map, a big chunk of Florida, the panhandle, is in the central time zone, not eastern time zone. So at the stroke of 6 o'clock Eastern time, the idiots on TV had called the state for war. So a lot of the people in the panhandle, they had an hour left to vote, I think stayed home. Now whether or not more of those people were Bush people or not, I thought maybe there was. So I'm neutral on this, but I'm saying there were a couple of major bleep-ups in Florida, that being one of them, that nobody talks about, right? So you've got essentially a state of that magnitude, and this is my issue with one of the issues of the Electoral College, is the idea that when that was all over, Supreme Court or not, anybody who's taken a statistics course in fourth grade, if they offer one, will tell you that state was a dead heat, right? I mean, it's this idea that, you know, it's like a Bonanza TV show where Hoss and Little Joe are running for mayor and everybody's voted except Ben, and then the vote's tied. You see him in there in the booth flipping a coin up and down. That doesn't happen. I mean, it's fine in a Western TV show, but it doesn't happen. The fact is, there's sloppiness in some of these votes. Now, when it gets down to, you know, 0.01%, it's not that big of a deal normally, because people usually win by more than that, right? So it usually doesn't make that much of a difference. But you actually have the idea that 50 or 200 or 1,000 votes is calling a state like Florida. Anybody with an ounce of brains would say, this is a dead heat, give both sides half. Right? I mean, mathematically. Now, of course, if your guy ends up winning or your guy ends up losing, you got a million reasons why your guy should have won or should have lost. You can BS all you want. The fact is, statistically, it's a dead heat. Isn't it, John? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, I should backdate my concerns about elections before 2000. I think you could trace a lot of the problems to when CBS instituted its voter profile analysis, VPA, remember that? I think it was in the 64 election.
Yeah.
When they started consulting their exit polls after voting to determine how the state was likely to go, and of course they weren't supposed to announce what they thought was going to happen until after the polls in that state had closed. But it's ironic in that it was really a way, supposedly, of making results known faster and to make them more certain and easier to analyze and compare and to predict based on what were pretty good polls. And exit polls, I think, are probably the most reliable of all if you want to project a winner or a loser. But then in 2000, you had even, you know, CBS pulling the plug on its own system and pulling the state of Florida out of Gore's column, you know, on primetime TV and putting it into Bush's column, which, you know, hadn't really ever happened before like that. They shot themselves in the foot, and maybe the
right
system had never been that dependable. But it was a perfect story.
Well, even if you go back to long before BW, before Webby, in 1960, the Nixon-Kennedy Illinois fiasco, and we were 8 years old, so it wasn't like we were we're right in the thick of it. But the idea there, if Illinois, if you could have flung half the votes to Nixon, half to Kennedy, it wouldn't have been a big deal. Who cares, right?
Right. And what's come out since then about, you know, the involvement of Joe Kennedy and Sam Giancana and all sorts of arm twisting in the West Virginia primary early on and in the Chicago results, too, those results were likely seriously tainted. They made all the difference in the 1960 tally, that's for sure.
And I don't know if they say it made all the difference. I never actually went through and counted the Electoral College, whether if Illinois would have flipped, Nixon would have won. I mean, was it that close?
It was, I think. And certainly the popular vote was extremely close.
Yeah.
I'd have to go back and double check. I don't know if that would have made the difference or not, but the, you know, the timing, the way the Illinois votes were, you know, tallied and daily sitting on the Cook County votes for so long. I do remember going to bed that night not knowing, and you know, this is kind of the first presidential election I was conscious of or knew anything about, and my, you know, everybody's watching with bated breath what was going to happen, and I didn't know when I went to bed what was the result. I found out the next morning.
If you were young and Irish and Catholic, the difference between the two guys, you know, one guy was, you know, exuberant, seemingly, you know, brilliant beyond all get out. Not that Tricky Dick wasn't brilliant, he sure was, but he was the most dour looking dude, especially on TV. I mean, the difference was dramatic if you were 8 years old, Irish Catholic, let's put it that way.
It was easy to make up your mind if you went to a Catholic grade school.
And yeah, well,
who should be president?
No doubt. But, you know, he came off of the Eisenhower presidency was, you know, the 50s just kind of limped along sort of on their own. And, you know, then Eisenhower played golf. You know, he played as much golf as Obama and Trump. And he didn't, you know, his idea was he didn't have to do very much. I mean, I don't know. Roosevelt basically made the call was who was going to be the next president after Truman. I mean, he refused to put, George Marshall in charge of the invasion because he needed him to run the two-front war. And, that was the call that, and as it said in the book Freedom from Fear, I mean, the head of the logistics and all the other stuff for the Civil War didn't become president. Grant did, right?
Right.
I mean, Eisenhower was probably not the most gifted general. In fact, he was probably number three or four, I would say.
Yeah, or lower.
Lower.
Competition, yeah.
Well, now, I would say that, who was the other guy? Omar Bradley was probably far up the food chain than him. Nimitz probably was too. There are a few guys I thought that were that I would have picked over Eisenhower.
It's certainly people who were more charismatic, you know, and tacticians too. But Eisenhower had a pretty stiff, you know, nothing personality, and it's confirmed when you see him in speeches and that. I mean, he was not a magnetizer.
Well, the nothing personality was perfect in the '50s.
Right.
The country. Yeah, things were starting to change a little bit, and he really didn't. I'm not denigrating Ike at all. I'm just saying that there was a time when he, you know, he was one of these guys that the thing that always pissed me off about him, and I actually have an article about it, and that way back in something I wrote for Dollars and Cents was his big speech on the military industrial complex. You know, and when he was leaving office. And the same thing that, I won't say anything bad about him, Arthur Levitt did when he left, like, the SEC. You know, when you get these jobs and you do nothing for, you know, 8 years or 6 years or long, Arthur Levitt was there. Then when you leave, you know, beware of this happening. Wait a minute, you were in charge for 6 years. What have I been worried for? You were supposed to be, and if anybody knew about the military-industrial complex, it was Ike. If anybody could have kicked ass and taken names, it would have been Ike. So let's play golf, and when you leave, what? Go ahead.
I mean, when Washington gave his farewell address and warned against, you know, foreign entanglements in the future, it wasn't the same kind of thing. It was a kind of a noble send-off. I'm going back to Mount Vernon, and here's what you got to be careful of. But with Eisenhower, as you say, he knew the military-industrial complex from his days at West Point. We're going back to the earliest years of the century, and he had been a total insider. After the war, he could have run on either party's slate. They would have been happy to have him. He could have probably gone either way because his politics were pretty ill-defined. And,
a cynical guy like Betty Weber could rewrite the speech. You know all that crap I didn't do while I was office playing golf? I'm warning the next guy against all that stuff.
I've gift-wrapped it in the Oval Office. Open it when you get in there.
Yeah, here it is. Here's all the stuff I should have done and didn't do. But, I mean, right? I mean, it wasn't like the 50s. I remember reading stuff like they would constantly go before Congress and overestimate the Russian threat. They had congressmen that, like, years later were convinced that the Russians had all these jet powered long range bombers, and it turns out they didn't have a jet powered long range bomber till like the well into the 60s or 70s. I mean, those were all prop, the bear bombers. I mean, there were people in Congress voting for B-52s because they thought the Russian guards already had one, and they didn't. And, crazy stuff. Anyway, let's concentrate more on this week, the markets, what's going on with the over in Europe. I mean, is this guy really planning on shutting Britain down for a month? Does he think it's worthwhile? Does he think it's going to work? I mean, what are we doing here? Is this all people trying to make a name for himself, or what are they doing, John?
I don't understand it. I fear that there's a distress call that's been sent out, and I don't know if it's UN-related or WHO-related. And it seems like people are stepping up and making really draconian moves. After, 8 months practically of a pretty much, complete lockdown, life is just completely altered for people in the last 8 months. Now we're going into an even more severe version of it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Go ahead, Chief. I think we're having some technical difficulties, John. We're going to have Chief.
I can
call
hear
back.
You, Matt.
All right. Yeah, I was actually reading up while Chief's calling back in. I was actually reading up on the military industrial complex just because it's a term I hadn't heard in a really long time, John. You learn about it in school, but you forget sort of the origins of it and how prevalent it still is, I think.
Oh, it's probably more insidious and powerful than ever. But it's curious how we had that kind of insight into it, but never mentioned it really until he was going out of office, practically the day before he surrendered power. So it is unfortunate maybe that there hadn't been an alarm raised earlier than that. We might have made a better mess of things in Cuba than we did in some other places, but that was not to be.
No, I mean, a lot of the our issues, you wonder if they somewhat could have been avoided. And I, if everything changes this week, I mean, I don't know how I can handicap this, to be honest with you. I think the election is going to be a lot closer than people think. I don't know how to handicap the Senate. I mean, I don't know what's going on there. I think that's a toss-up, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it's not, 50-50 or 49-51. I mean, whoever lands in there. Obviously, if it's 50-50, it makes a big difference who... But, historically, even though they've gotten rid of some of these rules on judges and things, I mean, how does a 50-50 Senate, operate? I mean, in the old days, you usually get people from both sides of the aisle would cross. Would every single vote be 50-50? I mean, in today's world, I would hope that wouldn't be the case, but would it?
It could be, which was the provision for the vice president to break the tie. So Pence might be a pretty busy, presider over the Senate if Trump is reelected. But then you look at the confirmation process for Amy Coney Barrett, and I think that was the first time in I don't know how many hundred plus years that a Supreme Court justice had been confirmed with only one party support. Which is a bad omen, a bad harbinger of what's to come for subsequent appointments, no matter who's president, no matter what party is in control or what party is in control of the Senate. It's likely to be, a situation where everybody has dug in their heels and you can't get much cooperation on anything, especially in something as consequential as a Supreme Court appointment. So if it's 50-50, there's a tie-breaking provision, and that will be that's a bad way to govern. I mean, no matter who's the vice president, no matter what party, if that's the way legislation is being approved, it goes down poorly with the population. And to have 4 years of that or 2 years of that is a pretty awful prospect. I hope we don't come to that. I mean, that's bad all the way around. I don't care who wins tomorrow. It's bad all the way around if it's that close.
Why don't, Jen, why don't people recognize basically what you just said? I don't care which side. It was a really, really bad idea. Even though I probably had, on a scale of 1 to 10, most people have not a lot of knowledge of the medical world. I had a little bit more because I was doing the show maybe, and then we had doctors calling in and so forth. But I had a little bit of better idea of how, because I'd done some research on it, and how hospitals would get paid and who was paying what, and the tiered pricing system. And I really, to this day, the people who don't like Obamacare, and by the way, I don't either, the only thing different is I would say that I absolutely felt that the old system, or whenever somebody says the old system was fine, what was wrong with it, I look at them like they got four heads, because the old system was not fine. It was absolutely falling apart. It was going to fall apart of its own weight within the matter of months or years. The idea of how that all worked out with the different, if you have a premium insurance, they pay through the nose, and they paid a $50 diaper when the kid leaves the hospital, and the next group pays this, and the next group pays that, and somehow the hospital has choreographed this whole thing together. Yeah, and that dog was not going to hunt much longer. So, but then the idea of a president putting together a plan and not having a plan of that magnitude, it probably is a single, well, I don't know about the thing. It's pretty close to being the, well, it's 20% of the freaking economy is medical, right? So, I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than that. I mean, I guess, Social Security might be bigger, but it's pretty darn big. To do that with no help, from the other side, sorry, Mr. Obama, is stone cold ignorant. You can't do that because, I mean, I don't care what your feelings are versus the other side. You've got to choreograph something to release some of the people over there say, this isn't a bad idea. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. This idea that we got 51 guys, we can jam shit up these people that, that thought would never cross my mind, John. You're right. That's really bad government. You can't run a softball team like that. I'm the manager. Just do what I say, like, forever. I don't care if half of you guys think I'm an idiot. You can't do that, right? There's some semblance of cooperation of making things work. If you don't make people a part of it, you never get every vote on the other side. And there's somebody who, even if they might agree with you, they feel they have to vote no or something. We get that, right? We get that in government and in a democratic system like this, with the different contingencies and different areas of the country. But the idea that half the people think your plan is just horrible, now we're down that same road. I hate to say it, but a lot of these young people think if you just win, if you have the vote, everything's okay. It's not okay. Because the minute the other side gets two votes the other way, they want to hear everything you just did. There's no such thing as just a good plan that both sides can live with. You can't go down that road forever, I don't think.
I think the overarching comment for that whole fiasco was Nancy Pelosi's statement that we have to pass this act in order to find out what's in it. Well, that should be the other way around. I mean, we should know what's in it before we pass it. But I mean, that should have raised enough eyebrows, on both sides of the aisle, Democrats too. That what are we getting into? Is this worth, getting a law passed that we're going to, half of the population reviles us for doing it, and they'll be fighting about it for the next 20 years. Well, why don't we just shelve it and try something else in 10 years? Let the dust settle a bit and breathe a little more easily about this and read at least what we're voting on. But no, I mean, it's just a classic example of how not to legislate, I think.
Well, you mentioned Amy Comer Barrett. We're going to go ahead and break time. We'll talk about this when we get back, but how a lady was... What was their vote for the appeals court? Like everybody? Right? I mean, I'm not a massive fan of hers, but, she was just approved. We'll figure that out on break. S&P futures up 38 now, we're down from the 46, but still pretty high. Dow futures up 394, not over 400, but still pretty high. NASDAQ up 86, they're actually down some from what we were talking about, 0.8%. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber on the board, and Mr. Dan Flanagan with us, as we do every Monday. Dow futures up 383, which is pretty high, except they were 463 a while ago. S&P up 37, they were up 46. NASDAQ up 81, they were up over 100. So we're still in a positive, kind of bounced back from a pretty horrible week last week, but we'll see how that it plays out. John, I have a question for kind of a long-term... long-winded question. Imagine that for me. We have this election that, by all accounts, if you talk to anybody, it's like, you know, if one side wins, the whole world's going to fall apart. And if the other side wins, the whole world's going to fall apart. Yet I kind of counter that a little bit with what I've learned from our buddy Carl Benninger, and that I've looked more and more on these long-term economic studies. And, you know, once in a while, if you're anywhere with some people and you say, gee, you know, that's pretty interesting, but if you really look at the unemployment numbers or you look at the deficit numbers or whatever they are, you almost can't even tell when your guy got in and your guy got booted out. I mean, the numbers just keep moving the same direction. And I guess either if Trump gets in and wants to do stuff he felt he couldn't do in the first term or whatever, or Biden gets in and there's this whole sea change or whatever, the corner that I'm leading the witness here, which is hard to do with a lawyer, but the corner I think we're into, how much flexibility do you think either one of these guys has? In terms of...
Well, I think...
In terms of anything,
flexibility, and I really think Biden has less flexibility in that the Democratic Party is likely to... I mean, if, assume Biden were to be elected, which I don't think is going to happen, but if it were to happen... He is now, you know, the figurehead of a very fractured party. And not that the Republicans aren't fractured, too, but he's got a wing of the party that got behind him somewhat reluctantly who have been aligned with Sanders that he has to listen to, and that he really has to placate, or he will be turned on very soon. And I think he knows that, and everybody around him knows that, and that's why Harris is his running mate, that she's a way of, you know, deflecting criticism from Biden if he doesn't respond quickly enough if he's in the White House. But that is an awful, you know, prospect for the next 4 years while you watch the Democratic Party pretty much disintegrate, I think is what's likely to happen. If they think they've got power because they've got the White House and they think they can pack the court or whatever other plans they have, and you've got other Democrats who are not at all in line with that, you're going to watch the party self-destruct week after week. So I don't
think... But that's not unusual, John. The same thing happened. Obama had the supermajority. The same thing happened when Bush did. I mean, the argument within the party became, that's where the argument was.
Well, there's always been fractures, and with the Tea Party, and I'm not saying that this is unprecedented, but I think that the split in the Democrats is much wider. I mean, if you look at the polarities between the wild-eyed wing and the, you know, the Blue Dog Democrats, you wouldn't think there's any home for them in the same party, and maybe there shouldn't be. But I don't remember any fracture in the past where the party is so exposed in the middle, and that it's almost impossible for them to bridge the polarities in the party. And Biden is not the kind of person to do it. Harris is not the kind of person to do it. They are the extreme wings. You have the ultimate hack and the ultimate, you know, progressive or whatever you want to call Harris on the same ticket. This has never really worked too well if you look back in history. Whether it was Lincoln and Andrew Johnson or a bunch of other tickets that were supposed to guarantee getting elected because you were pitching yourself to widely disagreeing parties. But what you ended up producing was a kind of ungovernable mess where the party became nothing at all like what either side wanted. I don't think it's that dire for Trump if he gets in, because I think the party will continue to rally behind him, although it hasn't, you know, been an easy task for Trump to get a lot of Republicans behind him at all. But I think his prospects are better in the second term than they were the first time around. So overall, I think Trump has some wiggle room, and he can use this in a way that maybe gives him even, you know, better prospects for the next 4 years if he gets in. Biden,
well,
really hampered and handcuffed.
Well, I think he's hampered and handcuffed by all the right reasons, to be honest with you, John. And I think if Trump chooses to ignore it, you know, he's more of a blithering idiot than I think he is. But the idea of the Bernie Sanders win, you know, be very deferential to our friend Matt Weber here, and whatever you want to use, the AOCs of the world, the people, whether they think they're in that wing or not, wherever the hell they are, John, they're not wrong. Somehow or another, you've got to figure out a way, whoever one of these dual cadres are that gets in there, if it was you or me, we're not as old, we have to tell people legitimately and prove to people that this economy includes them, when it's very obvious for the last 20 years it does not. I mean, you can BS all you want and pontificate and walk out like a peacock. The simple fact is that probably 60% of the economy has been in a depression / recession for 20 years. And those numbers do not lie. They absolutely do not lie. So it's not a question of, yes, don't worry, everything's really okay, when you see 25 people making, you know, some massive percentage of the money. You know, I mean, it is not working. It has become crony capitalism. It's becoming a monopolistic cartel society. And you can tell the AOCs of the world all you want how she's young, she's crazy, she's nuts. She's not. Her solutions are not what I would go for, but she's reading the same stuff I'm reading, and so is Bernie. This is not working, and you can tell people what is it? You can tell me, you know, be in my shoes, but don't tell me it's raining. You know, but now, you know, I'm not this crazed liberal because I want a competitive society more than it is now, and that's where I want to go back to. And I don't want to be a socialist. I don't want to go that way at all. But anybody that thinks that this is working, this is like during the Depression. telling the people in the coal mines in West Virginia or the people who were sharecroppers, don't worry, this is all okay. No, it's not. Just saying.
Well, I think there's merit in what you say, although I think the way Sanders and AOC and the other squad members have gone about it has worked against their interests. Had they been able to mount a true third-party campaign at any point to clarify exactly why Sanders is not a Democrat, and I mean he's forced to run as a Democrat in the two-party system, but he's not a Democrat, and he would tell you that.
Like Trump, yeah. Well, Trump's no Republican.
The affiliations have now, you've got AOC and the Justice Democrats who made her their spokesperson. I mean, she was a bartender before she got woke, and she was picked by the Justice Democrats to take down an old guard, Democrat in Bronx, and somebody that was the face of the party to people for decades. Not that he's a great politician. I'm not trying to stick up for the guy necessarily, but he had been in there, and he was a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, and you have AOC taking them on and turning the party into something else. Well, when you do that, and you try to keep an umbrella over the whole party that you're stuck with now, when you've got people yanking, in a tug of war at each other, in some kind of a death struggle, the party is not likely to survive, and the party's interests are likely to fail too.
I don't disagree with that. What I'm saying is two things. First of all, you remember being young. I don't know, but I can. I don't know if you can or not. If we were 35 and AOC was a part. If AOC was the bartender, we'd be having a beer right there.
Telling her, don't go into politics.
Whatever we'd be saying, but we'd be right there. just saying, we wouldn't be... by the way, I was a bartender for exactly four Saturday afternoons at Barnaby's, and I quit.
So, in South Bend?
No, the one in 79th in Pulaski.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't know that.
But I made like $2 an hour for four Saturdays. I guess it ain't worth a Saturday afternoon. I got to play softball. So
had to listen to the same stories every Saturday, too.
Yeah, well, boy, there was no bar. Nobody sat there. All you did was serve beer to the table, so you didn't even talk to anybody. Imagine me not talking to somebody for 4 hours. Anyway, what I'm saying, Jen, is that Bernie, I don't like the idea that the people in my industry somehow got all this money all of a sudden, and we're going to pay down everybody's student debt. I mean, I've criticized the man forever because I think he should have a calculator on his belt when he opened his mouth. But the simple fact is, when you and I went to Notre Dame, tuition was, room and board included, was $4,000, which virtually anybody with a middle class, would even work for GM, could pay for their kid. And now it's 70, and there's people walking out of school with $250,000 or the debt, and oh, by the way, they are having trouble finding a job for over $40,000 a year, which is, not much more than people made in 1980, for God's sake. To say that there's nothing wrong with this system is now the idea that you're going to tax people's stock trades to get rid of student loans. I mean, that's stupidity. But the point is, it's not like there's nothing wrong there, John.
But the solutions, debt forgiveness for all student loans or free college tuition or these other bromides.
Oh, I crazy, but that part I get. Yeah. But I can remember when we were young, people would say, Martin Luther King had a point. I just wish he wouldn't, demonstrate. He could just go at it another way. I don't know if there was another way, John. I'm thinking maybe there wasn't. Just saying.
Well, that's what the ministers told him, and, the protests and the bus boycott and Birmingham, and if you just go about this more quietly, don't scream and yell so much, don't get out and demonstrate. Things will change in your favor. Just be patient.
Yeah, when in four centuries. Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't want to hear that, nor did a lot of people he represented. So that was not going to fix the problem. But
I'm saying right now, Tuesday night, from my lips to God's ear, we got a winner. Whatever the chances of that are, we got a winner. Okay, and I've been reading here this morning, Biden presidency, all this infrastructure. Jen, I don't care who gets in there? You can be Solomon, you can be Jesus Christ, for God's sake. The checkbook still looks the same, right?
Right.
Well, where all of a sudden, plus, what are you even doing for infrastructure? If you had told me 5 years ago, infrastructure, I would have said all these small towns around like Chicago and these big cities that have rail, that you want to get rid of some of the cars on the road, I would have upgraded our transportation system to the loop. I'd have people from Janesville, Wisconsin, being able to commute to Chicago on a train that went 85 miles an hour. I'd have done all that stuff. Guess what? Downtown Chicago is dead. Is that even a plan anymore? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. So, I mean, right now, if you said, where's all our infrastructure, what are we talking about? Are we talking about just pissing away dope, painting bridges we should have painted 20 years ago? Or is there some kind of a plan? We don't have a Hoover Dam left to build. We don't have, obviously, we can do something with the, you know, the Wi-Fi networks. We can do something. We can clearly do something with our electrical network. It's not like there aren't things to do. But it's not, I mean, the idea that somebody's going to come in there and miraculously the checkbook's going to look different, and we're not going to be $7 trillion in the hole in the Federal Reserve and $22 trillion, actually more like $25 the federal government, for Joe Biden. He can just keep start spending. I mean, what are these people thinking? And the corner is, if I paint us into a corner and you walk across the paint as the new painter, you're still going to get your feet stuck in the paint, right?
Right. Well, you know, I guess in a perfect world where the issues were more clearly focused in an election, wouldn't the lockdown or tightening of the lockdown be a central issue? I mean, it's comparable to having the federal troops in the South after Civil War and Reconstruction, and do we really need this lockdown anymore? Can't we, you know, reallocate our resources? This hasn't really figured into the presidential race at all as a way of beating up on each other for not having a plan to deal with the virus 8 months ago, which, if you think about it, is totally pointless. It's what are we going to do no matter who gets in and get this country back on its feet? I don't hear any side really pushing for that. It's not an issue that people are voting on, it seems. I have a pretty...
Well, there's two things. Let's assume, well, whatever, I can't assume away the virus, but somehow or another, several things have to happen, John, and we're going to, maybe by Thanksgiving, we can get a little missive out that people keep telling us we should do. Somehow, in the next 5 years, we absolutely need to get medical care costs at the same quality or better, down from 20% of the GDP to 15 or 16, or we're broke. Neither one of these guys has a clue. It's not even on an agenda. That has to get the number, the gross number has to be down. It doesn't matter who the hell is paying for it. Whoever the who the hell is can't afford it. It's not a question of grabbing another P out of another pocket. Those numbers are too high. Right? It's just the truth.
Do you think it will require something as radical as breaking up hospitals and health organizations, which now actually control physicians? I mean, every physician I've gone to, you know, the last 10, 20 years now works for a hospital or, you know, a health organization. They have no say, really, in policy. They, you know, don't make probably as much money as they did when they had a practice they had with
a
sole practitioner. So I'm sure, are extremely unhappy with this whole system, but the system is crunching them up the same way it's crunching up their patients. And I don't...
Well, that's right. And the prescription drug part, everybody's going to say they're going to drop them. I think you got to arrest people, Jeff. I mean, anybody who took over a generic drug company and doubled the price the next week, it's a felony, for God's sake. Right?
Well,
the combination resulting in a restraining trade, and it's a felony. It's flat out in the Clayton-Sherman Act. And yet it goes in every day.
I wish some people had done real time for what happened in 2007 and 2008 with the housing crisis. Those were crimes that were punishable by long prison terms. Nobody went to trial. Nobody was
indicted. Well, I think the first thing in the president's inauguration address, whoever wins, he should say, by the way, there's been how many combinations of generic drug companies in the last 5 years? John, there's like hundreds of them. Not hundreds, there's dozens of them. And just say, by the way, on my agenda, we know what's happened. We're gonna evaluate 20% of these things, and if there's any antitrust stuff, we're coming after you. First thing you do is identify it. I really believe these two laws make sense. And by the way, it's going to be something in my administration. Just tell people. Instead of having the guy stick a check in your back pocket and say, no, that's fine. I mean, that's an issue. In a state like Illinois, this pension thing has got to be resolved. There isn't anybody over the age of four that doesn't realize that. You can't be paying people the double dipping, the other stuff. You've got to cut the abusers out of there. Even if it's not that dramatic amount of money, you can't let a state or a governmental body or anybody, every single time you send out checks every week, you're essentially, to me, that's akin to fraud. You've got to stop it. You've got to give somebody an idea that the government is, that there isn't a national sport. I mean, we have Obama and Bush, and we had a war on terror for what, how many years? This is an actual war, right?
Yeah.
During a war, how they defined it, it's not a declared war, but I can get on that road. If you have a war, stealing money from a government should not be a national sport. Right? I mean,
of course not. Yeah.
I mean, but yet it is. You know, I mean...
The lobbyists who have engineered this mess, but, you know, treat either party the same way. They get results the same way. And you've got certain lobbyists who are more powerful and have more money to throw around than other lobbyists. So it doesn't really make a difference whose, you know, political allegiance you're talking about. The lobbyists are getting to you, and they're getting their results anyway. So this has never... I mean, wouldn't it be nice if it could filter down into a true, you know, inter-party division, where this person's on the side of big healthcare, this person's on the side of fracturing it and getting rid of it. It's never going to be that. Not while you've got, you know, the revolving door of people going in and out of these lobbying firms, in and out of government, and dictating the result that the most powerful people want. It has nothing to do with competing interests on a level playing field, ever.
There's lobbying. One of my best friends from high school, his older sister, nicely married this terrific guy from Valpo, and he was a swimmer, real nice guy, and he was a dude that was a lobbyist for the insurance company. Now, this is a long time ago. And I said, okay, what does a lobbyist do? And he goes, well, obviously we work for the insurance companies. He goes, it's not, more often than not, somebody will put together a bill and write the stuff up, and one of their staffers write up a section. And it's our job to read the bill. He says, a lot of times, these guys have stuff in there that will eviscerate an industry or a person. They don't even know what's in there. They have no idea how to think it through and say, well, geez, if we do this, there's going to be no more gas stations or something. So somebody has to show up and say, by the way, do you guys realize that in this bill, if you do this, this is going to affect all these people, unintended consequence? He goes, this is a long time ago. He's like, lobbyists was like 80% education and 20% pushing. Well, now I think it's the other way around. But you can lobby me all you want to shoot my next door neighbor tomorrow morning, it's up to me to say no, right?
Right.
No, I'm not going to shoot my next door neighbor.
But none of the politicians have that kind of backbone. It's pretty clear, and that's what, you know, we've got career politicians who, you know, do not listen to their constituents. They don't even listen to their consciences anymore. So
But it's compounded by having bills that are so long that you can't even read them. I mean, why we can't pass, you know, a bill a week on individual subjects, I have no idea.
Of course.
I mean, I don't know what...
Take one of these bills apart and explode it, you know, like for on a PowerPoint presentation or something, and you could probably carve out every single sentence in a 2,000-page piece of legislation and attribute it to a particular representative or group of representatives or a lobbying firm or a PR firm, and they've all got their thing in there, and this is monstrous Hydra head that passes for a bill, but it's all just a way of accommodating people who got their foot in the door and, you know, gave the biggest favors and got the biggest checks, and that's why the bill reads as incomprehensibly as it does. So,
but we have people who's ever going to be president who's ever going to run for president again in our lifetime. There's going to be somebody who's bitching about Congress. We had Ronald Reagan talk about the line item veto. And then that was that a Supreme Court decision or whatever that was? They can't do a line item veto. We still haven't seen anybody. They all play by the same game. They're all in the same room. You still don't have a... I mean, if it was a president, what would happen if we were the four-headed monster in the Oval Office and Congress sent us this bill that was like, you know, 15 inches high? And then a week later, we had our staff and ourselves, and we might actually read some of it, imagine that. And we put out one next to it that's an inch high and say, this I'll sign, this I won't. And here's what I pulled out. And throw on a website, let's see, new golf clubs from Manny Weber, new dog toy for Venkman, you know, and then the representative to push that in there. Have them all, just have, you know, we're kicking ass and taking names, we're putting the names out there. No one will ever do that, John. You know, here's a Reagan,
somebody gave Reagan a copy of one of his budgets, which was like, you know, a foot high. And here's the budget, Mr. President. And Reagan looked at it and flipped through it like you would a, you know, deck of cards or telephone book and said, looks fine to me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, where do you, but you're never going to say, I'm not buying this new sink for the church in Jan Flanagan's neighborhood to the tune of $1 million sink. And by the way, who's this Jan Flanagan? How the hell did he get in here? I mean, nobody's ever going to do that, right? Because they're all doing it.
To find this kind of stuff, or there's no point in even trying to look for it, because it'll take you the rest of your life or several lives.
Well, you got a pretty good idea. That the one guy I ran into, one of my favorite stories was I went to Washington. No, not Mr. Smith went to Washington. I was there for a meeting, and we got a dash here in a second. And we come across a guy, and he was on a committee for agriculture committee when they had these massive floods on the Mississippi in like 1991. It was awful. And he said there was a guy in the committee that had there was a Missouri River in Vermont or New Hampshire or someplace. The guy wanted money for his river too, even though they didn't flood. So they stuck it in the bill just to get the guy's vote. Isn't that special? John, we're going to dash here, talk to you later in the week. We hope S&P Futures up 40, NASDAQ Futures up 393. Oh, no, I'm sorry. NASDAQ Futures up 98, Dow Futures up 393. We're hanging in here, up pretty high. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here, right now, right now.
Well, on Face Facts and Jacks, and tonight it's Matt Weber. We have Mr. Mike Hart with us. S&P Futures up 39. NASDAQ Futures up 90. Dow Futures up 409. We're trying to make a sprint out of the gate to make up for last week, which is pretty friggin' awful. What do you think about, actually, we should go through all this stuff here. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 204. That's 1.7. FTSE up 67, 1.2. Techron up 89, 1.9. So pretty much bullish across the board there. They were down last week as well. DK up 318, 1.4%. Shanghai up 59 cents. That's flat. Hang Seng up 352, 1.5. As a way of Friday, Dow was down 157 after a furious rally in the last 15 minutes. It was down like 300 or 400 most of the day. S&P Futures still was down 40, didn't make it back quite as much. NASDAQ was still down 2.5% to 74. So NASDAQ was the big whack. Bonds, 0.85%, that's as high as we've seen in a while. That's a 10-year yield, wasn't it, the bonds. Bond minus 0.62, that thing refuses to move, even though ours has gone up some. And Japan has gone up some. Japan is now up positive 0.4%. So the only one that's really sticky negative is Europe now. We'll talk to Mike a little bit about that as to why that is. Oil down 30 cents. Get a load of this. 35.49. That's down from 42-something, I'm going to say 2.5 weeks ago. Brent down 23 cents, 37.71. Natural gas down 7 cents, 3.28. Arbot bond down a penny. That's $1. Of course, one of the reasons why these oil be down so much is if Europe locks the place down, you can't drive very much. So that's part of that deal. Gold up 12 bucks, 18.92. Silver up 54 cents. That's a big move in silver. That's 2.5%. 24.19. Copper up 3 cents, 3.08. Betty, how about some traffic, weather, sports? Then we'll get to Mike.
Sure, 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're still looking pretty good on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. That earlier crash on the inbound Kennedy Express lanes is all clear at Ogden, but Kennedy moving a bit slow as you approach Division heading into the circle. Nothing out of the ordinary there. Outbound side looks okay. No issues on the Edens. Eisenhower and Stevenson have been quiet all morning. Same for the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. Lakeshore Drive's been quiet, too. Off the expressways, we have a few odds and ends to clear up here. Out in the western suburbs near Wheaton, North Avenue at County Farm Road, there is a crash. Just northeast of there, Palatine Road on the eastbound side between South Wolf Road and Milwaukee is closed due to a crash that happened earlier this morning. It's a crash involving a semi that went off the road into the woods, and it's being towed, and so traffic is forced off at Milwaukee as Palatine Road remains closed, and it has been closed for the better part of a couple of hours, so you'll want to avoid that. North of there, near the lakeshore, Sheridan Road at Center Avenue up in the north shore, there is a crash. And lastly, just west of there, Route 134 at Belvedere, there is an accident. Weather today, lots of sunshine today, and it'll be sunny all week. Today we'll reach a high of 51, so that'll feel nice after yesterday. And then we warm up even more than that later on this week. Right now it's crystal clear and 31 degrees downtown, going up to a sunny high of 51. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 94. Right now it's clear and 72. In sports, as we talked about a lot in Hour 1, the Bears had a 10-point lead and a lot of momentum, and then they fell behind by 10, rallied back, and tied it, only to lose in overtime to the Saints, 26-23 at Soldier Field. Bears dropped to 5-3, but they remain a half game behind first place Green Bay, who lost as well. Arizona Cardinals were on bye yesterday, so they're looking good at 5-2, and they'll return to action next week. And Sunday Night Football, it was the Cowboys getting blown out in Philadelphia by the Eagles, 23-9. Chief.
How many more national games do we got to watch the Cowboys?
Well, once I think after week 8 or week 9, they start flexing games. So the Cowboys will get flexed out of all of those, hopefully.
Yeah, I would imagine. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing fantastic. And the Buffalo Bills had a nice little win yesterday against the New England Patriots, which... you don't say that too often, Bills winning against the Patriots, but I guess it's a different kind of year. So, I'm happy to report that as well.
We didn't hear much about the Bills the week they got trounced, did we, Manny?
No, we didn't.
No, just saying. I'm selective in my reporting.
Well, the Bills, though, what do you think they are? Well, first of all, on a scale of 1 to 10, who are the ones other than Kansas City? Is anybody close to them?
Well, Pittsburgh's undefeated, and they're very good. So I would definitely put them in the same category as the Chiefs. And they've played, you know, a tough schedule. So you have the Steelers at 7-0. I would say them and Kansas City at 7-1 are the class of the AFC. And then, you know, a tier down from them is the Buffalo Bills at 6-2, who are very good. The Ravens at 5-2, who are good. The Colts are 5-2 and have a really good defense, and they appear to be a good team. I would say those are your top teams in the AFC. And then, the Dolphins have been sneaky at 4-3. In the NFC, it's not nearly as good, but the NFC West has a lot of good teams. Seahawks are 6-1. They're probably the best in the NFC. And then you have Arizona at 5-2, the Rams at 5-3. Tampa Bay and New Orleans are both 5-2, and we've seen what they can do. And then, the Packers are still there at 5-2. So, but the AFC with the Steelers and the Chiefs, the winner of that, you know, game in the playoffs, I think wins it all.
I was not all that impressed by New Orleans last night.
No, I'm not at all either. And their number one receiver, Michael Thomas, has been out, and when they get him back, they'll be better. But it's basically 5-yard passes to Kamara, and that's about all they can do.
Yeah, Manera, they can't stretch it, and I think Drew Brees finally's lost a little bit, but not a lot. But the older guys, when they see the guys around them not being there, they kind of shut it down. They understand the drill.
Yep.
Mike, we've got the bounce back today, I guess was somewhat expected. I don't know about that expected, but maybe based on the close Friday night where we came flying back a little bit.
I don't know
how you call this one.
Honestly, like I call this just kind of squaring up before the election. I think right now that's all this market's about. I think, tomorrow night, it's going to be eerily quiet as we wait for these results to come in. I can say right now, I went back this morning. I was just trying to get some stats together for the show here, Tom, and I just was curious where we stand right now in volatility terms compared to where we've been. And I was only able to go back to 1990 on the VIX. So going back to 1990, I looked at every election, and we're at the highest volatility that we've seen for any election. The only election that we've come close to is 2008. Of course, we had the financial crisis in October back then, so that was playing into the election, and that we saw an IV or a volatility VIX at 32. So, on average, if you took all the years collectively, I just ran a quick average here, and 18.3% is the average VIX print that we see, and we're about double that right now.
That's pretty darn high. I don't see in the last week or so since I've talked to you, we're starting to get a little bit of a drop in the far out months. Matter of fact, we put a lot of positions in. We're buying September selling this Friday and getting like a 10 and 11 point difference in implied volatility.
Wow.
Whether it's enough or not. Well, it's enough or not. The last chapter is yet to be written, Mike, but if we get one extra trade out, actually Wednesday night, I think we have. Get one extra trade out of it, we could be all right. But 11 points is a lot. I mean, I go back and forth on this. Obviously, the election itself, whether or not it's going to be over tomorrow night, whether we're in the Supreme Court, whether there's people, you know, shooting guns all over the place. I hope that none of that stuff happens. But at the end of the day, we're still locked down. We're still into a situation where we got no dough. We got no solution for this. We got no solution for the COVID, and by the way, if there is no solution, we have nobody in the stones to say there is no solution. So we have a crisis everywhere. We have a crisis with the event itself, and we also have a crisis with the leadership surrounding the event. So it's like we doubled up on our incompetency here.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the idea that you have doubled volatility is not even remotely surprising given all of the moving parts here. And that is interesting. You know, I think maybe what you could judge from, it's hard to judge anything from just reading pure implied volatility. You can pull away, you know, all volatility tells you is kind of what the market's anticipating at the moment in time. But, you know, with volatility falling in the back months, it may suggest, and this is just my takeaway, it may suggest that perhaps the market's anticipating the election's going to come away with at least a winner and a loser. And that may be a result. We're seeing a little less volatility in the back months. But like you said, there's so much there's so many reasons for volatility to stick around after the election. I don't think anyone sees it going away.
Well, let me ask you this. You mentioned, by the way, nice job on that research. If you were to pull away, if you yank the election out of it right now, that there is no election, how much does the VIX drop? I don't think it drops all that much. A little bit.
Right.
But,
I mean, I've got to completely agree with you on that. I just, you know, I think about last election. I think about 2016. And, you know, if Biden were to win this election, I think it would cause less volatility than when Trump won last election. I think, you know, just the way it's set up this time is it would be more of a surprise to the system this time if Trump did win. And I don't typically talk about what I think is events, but since, hey, we're the day before, why not throw it out there and put it on the line? But that's the way I'm interpreting this going into the election.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree. I mean, there's a certain amount of, to be a total cynic regarding sports, the reason why you fired a coach is because the fans basically get off your back for a year or two for the new coach to have a chance. So
right.
I wonder if Biden gets in, you know, people will stand down and listen. I mean, if he wins handily enough where there's not a challenge, I don't think that's going to happen, honestly. But if it does, you know, I don't know that people don't take a pause for a little bit. I mean, for God's sake, he's not even in until January, you know. So I don't know what. But the numbers, like I guess, was mentioned earlier, I'm starting to get this longer term view. Regardless who's in there, they're going to look at the same debt numbers I'm looking at. They're going to look at the same Federal Reserve balance sheet. They're going to look at the same states in trouble. They're going to look at the same, you know, industries in trouble. And what are they going to do? And they got a country that's is being, you know, and I think there's a, you know, I obviously we all look at the stuff. You just went through research that, you know, was terrific to do. We all on the show research stuff, and every time we bump into, you know, Kevin and Carl are our biggest guys that talk about where they get it and so forth. And but I mean, the whole idea that every single time if you're a citizen and you bump into, wow, it sure seems kind of dumb to me that you can sit every seat in an airplane and somehow these people think you're safer than sitting on a football stadium 30 yards from somebody. Doesn't make any sense to me. And yet you go there and you see 15 studies all paid for by American Airlines. And you go, wait a minute. I mean, I just think that a total degradation of any sort of being able to believe anybody right now, to me, is right now one of our it's probably the most lingering issue to this whole mess. That you can't believe anybody. I mean, you'll see some article and you say, oh, wait a minute, I just read another one where this guy left the two cogent things out, or this lady. I mean, it's this total one side is willing to say absolutely everything to the other side, and everybody, I mean, just the lies just hovering in the air every place, or lack of information, or lack of full focus, or something. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we think that Joe Biden is in, all of a sudden we're not going to have a deficit, or somehow Trump has got his infrastructure plan. He's been having 4 years to try and do what he can't do. And by the way, we don't need money for it. So I don't see what changes. Do you really?
No, I think structurally, not you can't make an argument that either candidate getting in is going to structurally be able to deal with this any better. I think the facts remain that this is going to be a very difficult few years in front of the economy. You have to look at how the market's interpreting this right now, and the way we sit right now, things, you know, the market's the ultimate discounter, and we're not discounting too much the future right now in the sense that the future doesn't look terrible. The market's doing well. We're remaining at all-time highs or near all-time highs. Last week was a little, it felt a little light. It felt like, you know, the market could really go down last week, which it did most of the week, and you got to wonder if that type of movement is going to really step itself back in, and are we going to start seeing a market that doesn't just consistently go up and up and up? And if that's the case, you know, how do we have to change our approach to trading, and you know, how do we react as traders to to a new market environment? And I think that's a big question we need to start asking ourselves.
Well, sometimes you can't be careful because you can't quantify it and you can't trade by it. But there are days, I think you feel the same way I do, and on the up days, which we've had, you know, a few weeks ago, we were up, you know, darn near every day, and you get this relentless idea that, wow, this spoo's up like 50 points. Why does anybody really have to buy here? I mean, they kind of missed it for today. Why do you got to buy the next 10 minutes up 50 points? Where are these buyers coming from? And then you think back and say, well, the Fed's pouring money in. There's buying power all over the place. The people from Robinhood, their stock's up 48 cents, so they have more buying power, so they're buying two more shares. So you see this relentlessness that goes on where it looks like there's a bidder underneath the market no matter where it is. For the first time really since March or April, last week I got this feeling that we're down, you know, 50 points to the spoos, and we rallied back three or four, and somebody piles in to sell it again, which normally when we start coming back up, that's the buy the dip mentality, and we just come right back up, or at least partially. Last week, totally different. I mean, it seemed like there was a seller, and if we're down 55 and we rallied back two, there was a seller that met it, which I really haven't seen since the spring, have you?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. You're right, and those are hard things to quantify. Sort of the nuances of intraday market trading is very, very difficult to quantify, and but you can get a feel for it. And there are definitely times when it feels like there's a new buyer or a new seller in the market, or there's a new sentiment going on around buying and selling. And I did feel it last week too. I felt we were starting to enter into a new type of trading environment, but at the same time, I think this election, all bets are off right now. And I think today's the day that if you have positions on that are kind of outside your risk comfort zone, it'd be a good day to kind of square things up and get comfortable around what you have going on tonight and into tomorrow. I think there is the potential there, and we have to listen to what volatility is telling us. The potential for a large move is there, and ultimately that is what a high implied volatility number tells us, is the market sees movement and it sees it to a large scale. So right now, going into the election, I'm looking today at sizing down on some of the positions that I have a little exercise on, and my short volatility positions, typically I'm laying into those and I'm selling more short volatility going into binary events like this. I'm actually not doing that this election cycle. I'm doing more defined risk trades, and I'm defining some of my undefined risk.
Well, yeah, I think you need to. I mean, just if you're a stock owner here and you've watched it go down some, especially if you're in some of the high techs, look a little wobbly here all of a sudden, or at least for a couple of days they did. Who knows? Today they don't. You look at the price of the insurance and you say, wow, you know, I mean, if you've owned, you know, Amazon or something, you know, God help you. If you, God doesn't need to help you. You got enough help. If you bought it at like 100 and it's up 3,500 or someplace. I mean, you look at the 3,000 puts and you go, wow, you know, that's the cost of insurance. That's pretty darn high, you know. But then, again, it's high for a reason, right? I mean, look at the Tesla, for God's sake. I mean, the you know, halfway down, the puts are there's a strong bid for them. You know, those guys, you know, the buyers of the puts know something, and the guys that are selling them know something. Who's going to be right? We'll figure it out. But it's when you see the cost of insurance that high, your instinct is, you know, I'm not going to, you know, buy the insurance. Well, you know, if you sit there and say, okay, but the insurance on my vet is $3,000 a year, I'm not going to buy the insurance. Well, that's one possibility. You also could sell the vet, right? and say this thing's too dangerous to hang on to. But I mean, but you don't know what. But I've had so many people in the last week, Mike, say it always comes back. Boy, oh boy, that is so ingrained in people. I don't even have to worry about it. It always comes back. And you know what? It doesn't always come back. You know, I mean, sometimes, well, unless it was my good friend, I'll just say Doc, not Dr. J, he buys some stock from his mother, and I met him, well, I've known his mother for ages, obviously, because we went to college together. She says to me, hey, Jimmy bought this stock for me, and He says it's a long term hold. Does that mean it's a really crappy buy? It? I go, that's exactly what it means. Right?
She goes, absolutely.
All of a sudden, she goes, so guess what? So my great grandkid's going to make a nickel on it, and he's going to say it was a good buy. She says to me, the lady's like 85, and I go, that's exactly what that means. I mean, so.
Well, you know, you've got to remember, like, when you look at the S&P 500, we don't keep the stocks that went out of business in the S&P 500. So
right.
You look over time and you say, well, I mean, just getting long stocks is the most obvious trade ever. I mean, stocks always go up, so why not just always get long stocks? The thing is, when they do go out of business, which they do throughout history a lot, they don't stay in our indexes. They disappear and they get forgotten from history, but those losses are real. So, stocks, they don't have to come back. That's a reality. That's a mathematical reality. I've done lots of research on this, and I can say with certainty based on the research, it doesn't have to come back.
Well, Mike, put yourself, I'm not positive I never asked, and I don't really need to ask on the air, but I don't think you were our retail broker, 37 and stuff. If you are, that's fine. Imagine if somebody would have, especially in the Chicago area, that's why I unless people bring their own stocks and so forth, if you'd ask me to invest money, I try and put it in the most liquid ETFs. Because I'm that, once in a while we'll do something in a stock, an early earnings play or something for a minimal amount of money. But that's, that's something different. But I really don't want to be the person that picks this stock, that stock. I mean, because the stocks are so high. I mean, how the hell am I going to put Amazon in somebody's portfolio? Even if somebody ships me $1 million, which like is a real amount of money, right? It used to be anyway. How exactly do I get Amazon in that account in any way that's hedged? Or not hedged, but even balanced.
Right.
I mean,
no,
I
think at the end of the day, ETFs are such a smart way to trade nowadays. I think just the availability of these liquid ETFs is a great spot to go to. And, I did a study last week. I was looking at ETFs, and I was looking at how do they compare to single stocks, right, and how much less risk do they actually carry. And I looked at it in the sense of, well, let's look at outsized moves. Let's look at how often, when they really did move, how often that actually occurred. And when you look at a basket of, I took the 10 most liquid NASDAQ underlyings, and I compared it to the 10 most liquid ETFs, so a real simple study. But what I found is that 5 times the expected move, so real outlier move, it occurred 1.25% in the stocks, for single stocks, but it occurred less than 0.5% for ETFs. And then if you look at the single largest moves, and you took an average of those for the ETFs and for the stock, the single largest moves for the stock, when you averaged them, was 12x, so worst case scenario. 12x,
yep.
Is going back to 2000. And the worst case scenario for ETFs was 7x. So it just puts perspective. Ultimately, you are helping yourself out on that tail risk and those big, big moves, which you say, well, the probability is so low, but, hey, we've all lived through 2008. We lived through this year. We know that these outlier events are very possible. So how do you protect yourself? And ETF is one of the easiest ways to do it.
Well, I've had some customers for a long time, Mike. So what if the nightmare scenario, thank God, this didn't happen. What if, say, a guy like you, a guy I like, say your dad, say Jeff. I won't say Jeff's your dad. But say, so Jeff's... I think his dad just passed, but say his dad comes in to me or his uncle in 2007 and says, here's my portfolio, what do you think? Or 2005, and he's got a boatload of Sears, no, he's in the Chicago area, Sears, Kmart, United Airlines, General Motors, Citigroup, and we could name a few others that put the pile in there. He'd say, what do you think of my portfolio? Bear Stearns? I'd say, looks fine to me. What am I going to say? These stocks all suck? I mean, they don't, right? I mean, and all of a sudden, 5 years later, they're all toast. And then he says, hey, remember that conversation? I go, I'm trying to forget it, right? I mean, how do you even, that's not going to, never in your wildest dreams, or General Electric, the stock that everybody, the minute went under 30, everybody wanted to buy it, or Lucent, These are stocks that were absolute household names that people will tell you, hey, nothing ever happens. But what about Schlumberger, for God's sake? $70 yeah. Now it can't get out of its way at 17 or 18, whatever the hell it is. I mean, these, at least if you got an S&P 500, I mean, there's going to be 500 stocks. There's going to be, you know, Maddie and Mike's hot dog stand at PTI will be in there if they need it to get 500 companies, right?
Absolutely, yeah, and that's that right there. I mean, that's a perfect example of kind of summing up what I'm trying to say here is when you have the added protection, that natural diversification that comes from multiple underlyings, it doesn't eliminate the single stock risk. I mean, hey, you own the basket and you have that stock in there. It's going to add a little risk, but boy, it definitely blunts the blow a little bit.
But it also doesn't get you that I bought XYZ at 20. And Friday afternoon and Monday morning, I walk in and some fool wants to pay 80 for it. I'm happy to sell it to him. So you never get that kind of rush with an ETF, though.
No, you don't. Yeah, forever. You know, risk reward, and you got to give something up in order to get that little peace of mind.
One of these days, I want that to happen to me. It hasn't happened to me yet in all these years. I just bought some piece of crap at $8, and the next day I couldn't screw it up. It opens at 40, and I couldn't screw up if I wanted to. I'm just waiting for that day still. Anyway, Mike, we got a dash, bud. Thank you very much. S&P futures up 35. We're leaking a little bit. We're still up 1%. Dow futures up 356. NASDAQ futures up 86. Hopefully we'll stay up here today. Everybody go vote tomorrow. Not today, tomorrow. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.